Numenor has a very special place in Tolkien's legendarium, but what makes it so special? What role does it have in Tolkien's imagination? Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel, we dive deep into The Lord of the Rings and Tolkien's wider legendarium, as well as A Song of Ice and Fire and The Witcher. Welcome. When you read The Lord of the Rings, you find Numenor mentioned again and again. 27 times in the main text on my last count, which, given it is an island civilization that vanished over 3 millennia earlier, is quite something. Clearly Tolkien thought it was still important after all that time. To understand why, we need to go back a little way into the mists of Middle-earth time. Men, the secondborn of the children of Ilúvatar, had arrived in the east of Middle-earth. Some had stayed there or migrated southwards, and a few headed to the west. The humans who ended up in the east and the south largely fell under Morgoth's influence as the First Age drew on, but those who had headed west eventually encountered the elves of Beleriand. Galadriel's brother Finrod was key in this. He was the first of the Noldor to meet men and played a central role in passing on lore and knowledge to them. Just as importantly, he brokered a series of diplomatic missions between elves and humans to ensure men could live peacefully in those lands. Many of the elves instinctively wanted to wage war on humans, fearing them as a threat rather than a potential ally or friend. Of course, partway through the First Age, Morgoth's forces broke free from the siege of Angband and started marauding across the land. There was now a greater foe for both elves and men to face. The humans that stood alongside elves in the battles to come were broadly from three tribes: the House of Beor, that's where Beren from Beren and Lúthien fame came from, the House of Heleth, and the House of Haldor, that's where Húrin from the Children of Húrin came from. The three houses became known to the elves as the Edain, which is pretty much just the Sindarin elf word for men, but came to mean just these men, the honourable and noble houses that had fought alongside elves against Morgoth, rather than those who fell under the shadow. Then came the War of Roth. The powers of Valinor went on the offensive. Morgoth was vanquished and his armies were defeated and scattered. It was a time for forgiveness and rewards. All elves who wished to sail to the Undying Lands could. Galadriel is a bit of an enigma here. Tolkien changed his mind a bit over what happened to her, but her aside, elves could now travel to Valinor. And the three tribes of noble humans, the Edain, were granted a land of their own. This was the newly formed, star-shaped island continent of Numenor. The Edain slowly migrated there over several decades, guided to it by the new Star of Eärendil. The first king of this new combined kingdom of men was Elros, Elrond's twin brother. Elros and Elrond were both half-elven, or mixed race. More accurately, they had some Maia ancestry as well as elf and human, and both were allowed to choose whether to live the life of an elf or that of a human. Elrond chose elf, and Elros chose human. As the light that guided them to their new home was the light from Elros's father's star, and Elros himself was descended from all three of the Edain tribes, he was perhaps an obvious choice as their new king. So, to pause here for a moment, this is the first reason why Numenor was so special. It was a gift from the Valar themselves. Ulmo raised it up from the waters as a reward for the faithful and noble humans of the three tribes. But the second reason why Numenor was so special is that it then grew over the following centuries to be the height of human civilization. They were great seafarers and architects of great wonders. Their armies were so strong, even Sauron feared them, and their island was alive with cultural wonders. They married the greatest of elf technology — they had and used the Palantiri, those mighty seeing stones — and their own inventions. Though it doesn't appear in anything published during his lifetime, Tolkien wrote some even more startling things about Numenorean technology. This is from Volume 11 of The History of Middle-earth, edited by Christopher Tolkien. "But they achieved only ships that would sail in the air of breath. And these ships, flying, came also to the lands of the New World, and to the east of the Old World, and they reported that the world was round. Therefore many abandoned the Valar and put them out of their legends, but men of Middle-earth looked up with fear and wonder, seeing the Numenoreans that descended out of the sky, and they took these mariners of the air to be gods, and some of the Numenoreans were content that this should be so." So, flying ships? Wow. To repeat, this never made it into the work he published during his lifetime, and perhaps he never would have published it, but it certainly shows how advanced Tolkien viewed their civilization to be. I did another video on that if you were interested. Added to all this, the people themselves were blessed by the Valar with long lives and healthy constitutions. Those descended from Elros's line in particular were astonishing specimens of humanity. Elendil, many years later, was 7 feet tall. That's over 2 meters 10 centimeters, and was 322 years old when he died in battle, seemingly still a force to be reckoned with. Even many, many generations later, we see this in the athletic and long-lived Aragorn, who lived to 210. The tragedy of Numenor, though, was that all this was lost. The art, the technology, the culture. The causes are manifold: moral decay and turning from Ilúvatar, the role of Sauron and basic human nature all played their role. But the blunt fact is that the fact that it was destroyed so swiftly and dramatically, and so few managed to escape, meant that very, very little was salvaged. Tolkien even gives this for the reason why there is only one complete or near complete tale of Numenor, the Mariner's Wife. It's because all else was lost. And perhaps that only survived because it told the tale of how Numenor made contact once more with Middle-earth after centuries of isolation. The real-world analogues and inspirations for this are clear. The sense of loss of knowledge with, say, the burning of the Library of Alexandria or the fall of Rome. And most importantly of all, the mythological sunken civilization of Atlantis. This was where Tolkien's inspiration was from, to the extent that he often referred to Numenor as Numenor Atlantis, a place of beauty and power now sunk under the waves, never to be found again. Actually, this Numenor Atlantis myth was very personal to Tolkien. He had a recurring dream about it until he put it down on paper and exorcised it. My word, not his. This is what he said. "I say this about the heart, for I have what some might call an Atlantis complex, possibly inherited, though my parents died too young for me to know such things about them, and too young to transfer such things by words. Inherited from me, I suppose, by only one of my children, though I did not know that about my son until recently, and he did not know it about me. I mean the terrible recurrent dream, beginning with memory, of the great wave, towering up and coming in ineluctably over the trees and green fields. I bequeathed it to Faramir. I don't think I've had it since I wrote The Downfall of Numenor, as the last of the legends of the First and Second Age. So, the downfall of Numenor, it being swallowed up by a huge wave, was a recurring dream for Tolkien, which his son Christopher also had. The idea of this great civilization, greater than anything humanity could after comprehend, destroyed in a moment, in a literal act of God. It was as if he had to write about it, putting it down on paper, before that dream could be at peace. How could that destroyed civilization then not be a central part of understanding Tolkien's whole world? Numenor may have been destroyed, but reminders of it are everywhere in The Lord of the Rings. Most obviously, Middle-earth is dotted about with wonders that were made by the Numenoreans or their immediate successors. The Tower of Orthanc, the Argonath, even Minas Tirith itself. The scale and beauty of these things is astonishing, but by the time of The Lord of the Rings, no one could dare replicate them. This was lost technology. So there is always a feeling of loss and sadness attached to Numenor, a desire to recreate its greatness, but fear of falling to the same fate. Humanity is capable of both greatness and great folly. But there is also hope here. Small and often hard to see, but as is so often the case with Tolkien, hope can be the start of wonderful things. At the Council of Elrond, Boromir asks people to believe not that in the land of Gondor the blood of Numenor is spent, nor all its pride and dignity forgotten. Aragorn repeatedly claims his heritage from Elendil, the Numenorean, and Faramir, in his great speech to the people of Gondor, exhorting them to make Aragorn king, also reaches the end of his oratory with an appeal to Aragorn's Numenorean heritage. Elisar of the line of Valandil, Isildur's son, Elendil's son, of Numenor. Shall he be king and enter into the city and dwell there? And all the host and all the people cried, yea, with one voice. Numenor represents the height of what humanity can be, and also a warning of how far we can fall. Tolkien wants us to see it as special because of both of those reasons. A warning of what could be if we stray down a dark path, but also hope of what could be if we stay true. There's always hope with Tolkien. If you'd like to see more Lord of the Rings videos, please click on the link on the left of your screen. Or if you'd like to support this channel, thank you. There's a link to my Patreon page on the right of your screen. That's all for this time. Thanks for watching. I'll see you again soon.